the truth.
Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. republicbroadcasting.org. It is a museum of free speech, because one of these days when there's no free speech around, you're going to go to a museum where you take your grandkids to the museum and you'll point and there'll be like wax dummies of John Stadtmiller and myself and Mark Collett, and you'll be saying, yeah, those people used to speak freely and now they're wax dummies. No, hopefully that's not what it'll be. But to avoid such a dystopian future, send a donation to republicbroadcasting.org. You can do that. You go there. There's a donate button. All the instructions are there. You're a big boy or a big girl, and you'll know what to do. And also download the Co-Certified app, because when you go to the museum's canteen, you want to know which food is non-kosher certified, because non-kosher certified is everything you want to be. All right, so it's Tuesday. We have Mark Collett today. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's good to be here. It's always good to start my week with the Patrick Slattery Show. Unfortunately, it's not the very start of the week anymore, but it's still the beginning end of it. So hopefully we'll have something good today to kick things off with.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot going on in Britain, and stuff going on with you personally. Where do we start?
Well, obviously, just before the weekend, this is probably the biggest news story in the world, or certainly was on Friday, is that here in Britain, a Member of Parliament was brutally murdered whilst holding a parliamentary surgery in his constituency. Now, for those who don't understand what a parliamentary surgery is, it's a event where local MPs sit down and they allow members of the public to come in and bring their problems to them. It's something that MPs should do. It's something they always used to do. And it's a way that the public can get to meet a member of parliament and directly take their concerns or hopes, etc., to that member of parliament. And as I said, this was something that regularly used to occur. These were things that would always happen, really, in the UK. But they're things that happen less and less now. Members of parliament are more and more divorced from their constituents and spend less of their time on constituency work than they do down in London discussing other issues. And this member of parliament, David Amos, he was doing one of these surgeries in his constituency when a man of Somalian descent who was a Muslim queued up calmly with a backpack on, waiting to be heard by his member of parliament before producing a knife and stabbing David Amos numerous times, which obviously resulted in the death of David Amos. Now, David Amos is a man with a wife. He has five children, or he was a man. He's now obviously deceased. He had a wife. He had five children. And in some ways, he was a traditionalist. In some ways, he's a man that we would have had something in common with. He voted against gay marriage. He voted against the expansion and normalization of the LGBT agenda. He voted against the legalization of abortion and the relaxation of abortion laws. He was obviously a Christian, and he had a number of different political standpoints that you could say were traditionalist and we would have probably had in common with him. But he certainly wasn't our guy, in inverted commas. He certainly wasn't a nationalist. He was actually a man who was very, very pro the state of Israel. He was very pro foreign interventions in the Middle East at the behest of the state of Israel. And he was also a man who was very pro refugees. He was very pro multiculturalism. And he believed that we should open our borders. He believed that we should welcome these people into Britain and do our best for them.
Well, I have a question. So this man, he's Somali descent. I understand he was the son of a Somali diplomat or something like that. Why did this young Somali man target what was his name, Amos?
David Amos.
Why did he target the parliamentary member Amos?
Well, we don't actually know yet. Now, he was obviously arrested at the scene. In this case,
was he Amos's constituent?
Yes. We don't know why he's done this. We don't know why he's done this. Nobody knows, as of yet, why this has happened. And we don't know why this has happened, because although he has been arrested, all we know is that he was what they call an Islamist. Now, they use the term Islamist when they're talking about Muslims who commit an atrocity. Now, obviously, when you hear about a Muslim committing a terrorist attack, the media have to have a way of playing it down. And one of the ways they try to play this down is by using the term Islamist. They never say this was a Muslim. They never use the term Muslim. They try to differentiate between Muslims and Islamist. And Islamist is the term they will use for a Muslim who commits an atrocity like this. And that's very important to note. So they called him an Islamist. Now, there are a number of theories going around about how this man was, quote-unquote, radicalized, because they always make real great pains to point out that these people are radicalized. They aren't apparently, this isn't apparently the norm. These people have been radicalized. Somebody has got to them. So this man was apparently, quote unquote, radicalized. Now, we obviously don't know any of the details on this as of yet. As of yet, we don't have a clue, because he is in police custody. The police have been questioning him ever since this, and there's no real news on why he has done this. I'm sure more news will come out. But one thing that's very interesting about all of this is the Daily Mail ran an article about this, and the Daily Mail seemed to go to extreme lengths to prove what a nice young boy he was. I'll read out the headline. Terror suspect who killed Sir David Amos after choosing him at random and wanted to be a doctor but became radicalized after falling out with his parents and watching videos of Islamist hate preacher Anjem Chowdhury. Now, they've gone to great lengths here to talk about how well-liked this young man was at school, how he fit in really well, how he was British, and how he wanted to be a doctor. And I thought this tone was very interesting, because I've seen articles where young white men have been sent to jail for possessing stickers or doing something that seems very, very mild in comparison to this. And they've all been sentenced under these bizarre hate crime laws, or these bizarre extremism laws, which seem to, on one hand, let Muslim immigrants get away with actual murder, or let them get to the point where they kill people, but on the other hand, white lads are being locked up for stickering.
Certainly let them get away with actual rape, right?
Yeah. I mean, I call this balancing the books, though. They have to tell everyone that extremism affects all people equally, so they have to find some white people that they can accuse of being terrorists for having stickers or books and arrest them. But one thing I found really interesting was how nicely they spoke about this guy, how they sort of talked him up as a good young lad that just ended up doing something terrible. Now, this is never how they speak about young white lads who put out stickers or who say something in a tweet. Young white lads who say something in a tweet or put out stickers which the establishment don't like, they're always painted as loners, they're always living in a bedsit, they're always people who had no hope in life. And this is all really interesting, because when this horrific murder occurred, there was a lot of people thinking, well, who could this be? Is this going to be pinned on the quote-unquote right wing? Is it going to be a Muslim nutter, which it turned out to be? Is it going to be an immigrant, which it turned out to be? Is it going to be an anti-vaxxer, obviously, which it didn't turn out to be? But I think one of the things that we should focus on as nationalists is not only that Sir David Amos actually supported the policies which ultimately led to his death, but I think we need to focus on the fact that when this is an immigrant, when the perpetrator is an immigrant, when the perpetrator is a Muslim, when the perpetrator is not indigenous to these islands, isn't it incredible how they manage to find positive things to say about them? And it just tells you everything you need to know. Because if I was a betting man, which I'm not, but if I was a betting man, I would put everything I own on the fact that if this had been somebody who could in any way be described as a right winger or a nationalist, the media would have been talking about them in much, much harsher terms. And the entire thrust of this conversation would be about, or the conversation about David Amos's death would be about changing the law and cracking down on people who were talking about demographics or talking about replacement or talking about mass immigration. Whereas now they know that it's a Muslim, I'm pretty sure that although this will receive a good amount of coverage in the press over the next few weeks or maybe even months, I don't believe for a minute that there is going to be any discussion of changing the law in terms of who comes here, in changing the law in terms of immigration, in changing the law in terms of how many new mosques are being built here in the UK. And obviously when people go to these mosques, some of these people come out and do things like this. So it is kind of interesting, and there's lots of things to unpack. Obviously we've got a couple of topics to talk about during the show, but if you want to ask me any questions about that, or if you want to give your takes on that, I'd be interested to hear them, hear what you've got to say about this.
Well, I mean, you raised the point that if he had been a white lad who was upset about the vaccines or anything else, they wouldn't be saying how popular he was at school or what good grades he got or anything like that. And you can think of, you know, you can think of, well, your own experience. You were accused of, I guess it wasn't like a criminal crime, but you were accused of some sort of political crime at some point and had to spend some time in court. The media, they didn't talk about what a good student you were or how many A levels you had passed or whatever, did they?
No, they didn't. When I was accused of 8 counts of inciting racial hatred, they certainly didn't talk about those things. I was obviously painted in the worst light possible. And what actually led to my prosecution was an undercover investigation led by the BBC, where they recorded speeches I made in private meetings in closed venues in the run-up to the European elections in 2004. And I was painted by the BBC as somebody who people should be wary of, as somebody that shouldn't be trusted, as somebody who has nefarious plans and horrible ideals. And I think it's very, very interesting to compare how the establishment and how the press talk about these Muslim killers and how they talk about nationalists who simply express an opinion. And I think it would be fair to say that in many ways, nationalists are really painted as worse for simply having opinions than Muslim killers are for actually committing horrific murders. And I think that's something that we should always take note of, because it tells you what the establishment's priorities are. The establishment really would rather deal with Muslim murderers than they would with nationalist thinkers or speakers or nationalist leaders or nationalist politicians. The establishment see nationalist politicians or nationalist community leaders as a greater threat to what they're trying to build than they view radical Muslims who are actually murdering MPs. And that's why they will quickly change policy when it comes to what we're allowed to say. They are constantly reviewing the way we should be allowed to talk on social networks. They are, in the wake of this, they're saying that should this should this lead to an end in anonymity on social networks? Well, I don't know what this case has got to do with anonymity on social networks. To me, it has nothing to do with that. To me, it has a lot to do with mass immigration, multiculturalism, and the idea that people from all over the world can come here and will be instantly compatible with our ways of life, with our values, with our morality, when in fact they won't. But that will never be questioned. Multiculturalism and mass immigration is now this holy shibboleth that can never, ever be questioned.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's clear that, I mean, it sounds like hyperbole, but it's not. It's clear that the ruling establishment, and I call them the Jewish-dominated elite, but it's clear that their objective is to replace the population. And it's not so that the Democratic Party will win elections forever. It's because they don't want any kind of... This is something that David Duke convinced me of, and I'm convinced he is correct on this. They don't want any kind of white solidarity, in European countries, a British nationalism, a solidarity between the native, the indigenous British people, or the founding stock white people, or even not just founding stock, but white people in general, any solidarity between them to challenge the power of the Jewish elite. The Jewish elite will allow for allies who are willing to work towards the same goals. But, the goal, it's not just permanent Jewish power, which is what I used to see this 25 years ago. I'd see all the Jews in government and in the media and everything, and I just assumed that they wanted permanent power. I didn't understand that in order to achieve permanent power, they felt that they needed to destroy a white majority, turn whites into a just one more ethnic group and a giant mishmash. But obviously now that's, in the past 25 years since I started focusing on this, it's very clear that that's what they're doing. And, I was in a big box store the other day, and I'm walking around and I'm seeing all these people from, I believe, Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan never had any connection to North American countries, to America. Arab women speaking Arabic with babies and toddlers in tow, and they never had any connection here. And then, of course, not just that, but, you see all of the white women with their black babies in tow, and you never saw this before. It wasn't a thing, but anytime you're logging onto your bank account, online banking, or anything else, you see these completely gratuitous pictures of happy white women with their black boyfriends. You always see this. There's no need to have a picture of anybody on a bank login page, but it's always a black man and a white woman. I mean, it's just everywhere. They're pushing this, and then of course also the homosexuality and the gayness and the trannyism, which you could say it's aimed at everybody, but really it's the whites are the most vulnerable to it, because in our culture today, our culture is one where your status is based on your victimhood. And if you're white, especially a white man, the only way you're going to be in a victim class is by, it used to be by going gay, but now I guess it's by whacking off your penis and going tranny. And of course, that is going to have an impact on your fertility moving forward. We've got another 30 seconds or so before the break. Do you have any response to that?
Well, I do have one response, and that is that one of David Amos's daughters was actually married to a man of African descent. And there are pictures of David Amos at the wedding looking very happy, very proud of his daughter, not at all concerned in what she was getting into. He seemed an ardent multiculturalist, and his family was one of those families you might see on one of those adverts that promotes this kind of agenda.
Okay. Well, let's talk more about that on the other side of the break.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are back. Okay, so you say it's come out that David Amos, not only was he pro-immigration and whatnot, but he was also the proud father-in-law of a black man himself.
Yeah, and as I say, I'm not in any way saying that David Amos deserved this. I don't believe that any law-abiding, decent person deserves a death like this. A horrific death like something like this could only really be in any way smiled upon if something like this happened to a horrific sex offender, or if you ended up, you know, maybe stabbing somebody in self-defense. I don't believe that people should face this kind of horror because of the decisions that they make, if those decisions are law-abiding and within the sort of normal realm of the decisions that you would make on a daily basis. And David Amos would have disagreed with you and I on our perspective on mass immigration. He would have disagreed with you and I when it came to his perspective on multiculturalism. He would have disagreed with you and I when it came to his perspective on refugees, and I say refugees in big floating quote marks, because I believe that most of the people flooding in here are certainly not refugees. In fact, I believe they're all economic migrants. That's really what they are. Yeah. And as I say, I'm not saying he deserved to die. That's not what I'm trying to say. I don't want to be misquoted. But what I'm saying is he did vote and support policies that led to his death. He did vote for policies, and he did support groups that speed this mass immigration, that speed the number of people coming into this country. There are pictures of him at refugee welcome events. There is a picture of him at a, I think it's a British Red Cross event, where he is stood there in front of a big thing that says the power of kindness, and he's holding up a plaque in the shape of a jigsaw piece that says, I believe every refugee matters. Every refugee matters. Well, he clearly did believe that these people should come here, and he clearly was happy for these people to get into relationships with members of his family, with his children, with one of his daughters. And his belief in this system of equality, his belief in this system of open borders and helping these people, his altruistic nature has led to his death. And you've got to liken this to Turkey's voting for Christmas. But the sad thing about all of this is we are talking about David Amos. We're talking about David Amos because he's famous, because he's an MP. His death is a world news story, top of the news feeds across the world. But we're not talking about 19-year-old Kayhan Tordorf. Now, 19-year-old Kayhan Tordorf is a boy that, or a young lad, that no one listening to your show will have heard of, which is very, very sad, because at the weekend, it was in a local paper and on a few tiny local news feeds on Facebook and Twitter, when it was revealed that this 19-year-old white lad was murdered by Aziz Khan and Arbaz Khan, as well as a 16-year-old who's also been charged with the murder but cannot be named for legal reasons. And this young lad, Kayhan Tordorf, was murdered in Bradford. He was murdered by those of migrant descent on the streets of Britain, stabbed to death, I believe, and it's not getting any press coverage. So whilst we do spend a lot of time talking about David Amos, and why I've spent a lot of time talking about this murder over the last few days, it's got to be said that it's only getting publicity because of who he is. And there are many, many white people who have suffered at the hands of the policies that he's voted for, who've suffered at the hands of this Conservative government that does believe in open borders, that does believe in uncontrolled immigration, that is allowing record numbers of migrants in. But those people don't get the press coverage David Amos has got. And that's simply because they're not famous. We're talking about this man because, yes, he suffered immensely. Yes, he shouldn't have been murdered, but he is famous. He's one of 650 MPs. And that is why we are talking about him. We're not talking about him. We're not talking about Kayhan Tordorf because he's unknown. And how many young lads like Kayhan Tordorf die every week or every month in Britain at the hands of gangs who aren't of indigenous descent? How many young girls in Britain every week are sexually abused, sexually assaulted, groomed, raped by men who are not of European descent, men who are of a completely different racial or ethnic group that have come here because of the Conservative government's open-door immigration policies? And that's what we really need to be talking about. David Amos, sadly, is the tip of the iceberg.
Indeed. Okay, well, we're going to go off to the break. When we come back, I believe there's... weren't you the focus of something going on in Parliament that we needed to talk about? I think you were. Okay, well, we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Okay, we are back, and I guess I've been corrected. So you were not the subject of things going on in a parliamentary committee, but you were there was a 6-month investigation of you by the British paper of record, the Times of London. Is that correct?
The Times, yeah, it's just called the Times, and it is the paper of record. They ran a 6-month investigation into myself and Patriotic Alternative, the organization of which I'm the leader of and one of the founder members of. They ran a 6-month investigation into me, Patriotic Alternative, and also Laura Taylor, the deputy leader, and into my book, The Fall of Western Man. So
it's now surging, isn't it? It's the sales are surging, aren't they?
Well, it was in the Times, and it was also they also repeated the story in the Daily Mail about the book, and the comments on the Daily Mail site were almost wholly positive in favor of the book remaining on Amazon, which is where you can still purchase it. But the publicity did push the book to the very top of the Amazon bestsellers list, or a Amazon bestsellers list, over the weekend when the story broke, which obviously is a good thing. But the story itself, for a 6-month investigation, wasn't really the hit piece they hoped for. Now, I believe they were writing this hit piece, and I believe they spent 6 months on this hit piece, because the game plan was to try and get me into serious trouble. The game plan was to try and get patriotic alternative outlawed. Now, that actually hasn't happened. Thankfully, it looks as if that won't be happening now. Now, the reason it won't be is because the journalist writing the article, a guy by the name of Dominic Kennedy, was very, very willing to actually come and meet myself and Laura Towler. Now, I have a couple of rules when I meet a journalist. The first rule, and this is my number one rule, top of the list, is always meet a journalist in a controlled and neutral environment. When I say controlled and neutral, what I mean is you meet them in a hotel conference suite or a hotel room or a conferencing center somewhere. It's got to be completely neutral. It's not at their offices. It's definitely not at your house. If it's at your house, they'll pick up on things that you don't want them to pick up on. Anything they see that they can use against you, they will do. The journalist has to come to my house. No chance. Absolutely no way on earth was he coming to my house. So that was the first thing. The second thing is, if you are actually dealing with a journalist and you are holding it, not holding the interview, not at your house, it needs to be a controlled neutral location. And what do I mean by controlled? Well, again, this is very, very important, because often if you're doing an interview and it's in a neutral location, say in a restaurant, in a bar, in a public place, you don't know who that journalist can pay to come and get involved, come and push you, come and shout abuse at you, come and spit at you. And this has happened before. When I was in the British National Party, there was a lady doing an interview with Sky News. Now, during this interview, in this very sleepy little town, in an area where we had unprecedented support, somebody just happened to walk up to her and spit in her face during the interview. Now, that has a really, really negative effect on the public when they see that. They might feel sympathy for you, but they certainly don't want to join your organization. And they don't want to join your organization because absolutely nobody wants to be walking down the street getting somebody walking up to them spitting in their face. And that's very, very important. That's very, very important to note. So it has to be a controlled, neutral location. So that's my first big rule. Secondly, you should only meet journalists on a one-off basis to answer questions. Never ever let them do a documentary on you. Never let them do a fly on the wall. Never let them follow you around. It should be controlled, neutral location for an agreed interview. And thirdly, you should always record that interview yourself. You should always make sure you have a full record of everything that was said so that these people cannot turn anything against you, so that these people cannot make it out as if you've said something that you haven't. They can't then defame you. And defamation is a big thing. That's why you should speak to the journalist. You should do the interview, because if you don't do the interview, unfortunately, you cannot sue anybody for defamation if the person writes a terrible article about you. If somebody writes an absolutely terrible article about you, but they actually haven't, you haven't given them an interview, if you've declined to answer their questions, it gives them a chance to write a much, much nastier article because you have declined their questions. So that's really, really important. You should answer the questions, but you should always make sure you record it. And that reduces the chance of defamation, as I said earlier. So we did record it. They did run the article. They did sensationalize certain things within that article. And now that has allowed us to publish our recording. And that recording can now be found on my BitChute channel and my Odyssey channel. And to date, it's been seen across the two different videos over 9,000 times already, which I'm pretty happy with, because obviously we want these recordings to be seen. We want these We want these interviews to be shared, and we want people to hear our side of the story. And I think it's very illuminating for a lot of our supporters to actually see, to actually hear, not see, but to actually hear how one of these interviews takes place, and to actually listen to the way that journalists put questions to nationalists, to listen to how journalists actually put questions to nationalists and how they attempt to trick nationalists or attempt to catch them out. And I think it was a I think it's a particularly interesting exchange. So
well, some of the most interesting parts of it, I mean, were they, first of all, did they actually lie about anything you said, or short of that, what were what were they trying to corner you into saying?
I don't think they actually lied about anything we said, actually, in the end. I think in the end we pretty much got what we said out in print. It's the way that they frame things that you said. It's the way they frame things that you said. And they frame a couple of the things in a way that isn't the most honest. I'm not saying it's a lie, but they do frame things in a way that isn't 100% truthful, or they put things in a certain way that makes it look like you're saying something that you're not necessarily saying, or that you're making light of something that you aren't necessarily making light of, or, and this is another issue, that you may in fact be talking about something and you make a quick quip about it, but then they frame that particular quip as if it was said in a different way. And that is why it's so important to record it, because when you do record it, when you actually have that evidence of what was said and the way it all went down, you can use that to inform your supporters, the people who are your donors, people who are your activists in your organization. You can inform them exactly what happened. And I think that puts us in a much better position than we've really ever been in before. I think that puts us in a much better position. And it's something I suggest all nationalists do. If ever you are sent to meet a journalist, no matter who it is, always make sure that you record it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any highlights in particular that you want to focus on or bring to our attention?
You just have to listen to it. It's 4 hours long, so it is quite. It is quite.
Oh, sure. And you got 9 hours.
Sorry, not 4 hours long. It's 2 hours long. So there's plenty. There's plenty of it there, and for me to pick a particular highlight out of it would be pretty tough. And I think there is a lot of good information in there. I think we answered all of the questions very comprehensively. One thing we wanted to do when we went into the meeting was to ensure that we answered everything in as much depth, give them as much information as we could. So if they did actually print anything that was a lie, we would have them on defamation. And during the interview, or at the end of the interview, we did inform the man asking us the questions, that we had recorded him and basically let him know that ultimately we were now in a position where we actually had an accurate record of everything that was said. And this is obviously a little nod to him.
Was he surprised that you had recorded?
No, he didn't seem taken back by it at all. In fact, he seemed very unfazed by it. But it was an interesting situation.
They were recording themselves. They weren't just taking written notes.
No, they recorded themselves too. But it was very interesting because ultimately, and this was what I found most interesting about the entire exchange, is that during this, he seemed very, very calm. He seemed almost as if he had very little on us. He actually said he didn't expect us to come and do the interview. He thought we'd just tell him to go away, and he wasn't actually expecting it. So it came as quite of a shock to him when we actually agreed to answer the questions. And the reason we agreed, the reason we were so happy to answer these questions, was because I had consulted a solicitor beforehand, and the solicitor had said, look, you want to answer these questions because it puts you in a much, much better, much stronger legal position should anything be said that is particularly libelous and you could actually sue for. So that was very, very important to us, that we built this strong position whereby further down the line, if anything was to happen, if anything was libelous, we could go for them. And when you actually listen to the full 2-hour interview, you will see, when comparing it to the article that was published in the Times, not very much of the interview actually makes it to the article. And the reason not very much of the interview makes it to the article is because we dealt with the more salacious allegations so well, it left them with very little to print. And at the end of this 6-month investigation, the biggest headline was Mark Collett's book is for sale on Amazon. Now, that isn't really a good piece of information to lead with based on a 6-month investigation.
That makes it into a campaign to get Mark Collett's book off of Amazon.
Well, that's all it is. That's all it ended up with, because ultimately, anybody who wants to could Google the fall of Western Man, could find my website, and they could go and see where my book's for sale. You don't need a 6-month investigation to find that information. A Google search will find that information for you.
Now, I had misspoken before the last break, saying something about parliamentary matters, but was there at some point like some sort of advisory committee that was looking into things, looking into
there was it was called, well, we weren't the sole subjects of this, but there was a group set up that was to investigate what they called hateful extremism and to propose new laws on hateful extremism, which would cover people who were discussing issues such as demographic change, issues of white genocide, issues of the Great Replacement. And that committee put forward several different recommendations, and one was to change laws on freedom of speech, which would outlaw the discussion of demographic change, that would outlaw the discussion of mass immigration, or outlaw campaigning against mass immigration or demographic change, should I say. Obviously, you could still talk about demographic change, you could still talk about mass immigration, but you would only be able to talk about it in a positive manner. And that particular piece of legislation is not going even before the government. It has been dropped at committee level. The Home Office has decided not to take that any further, not to go any further with that. And obviously, that's a positive move from our point of view, because ultimately, if the government did make it illegal to talk about demographic change, that would drastically reduce the rights of more or less everybody in the UK, and certainly would make it a lot more difficult for people to campaign legally about issues to do with mass immigration, and that would affect us greatly. But I think it tells you just how scared our opponents are that such a piece of legislation would even be considered. They're considering such legislation because they are well aware that more and more people are becoming extremely concerned about issues about demographics, issues about replacement, issues about mass immigration. And over the last, let's say, 12 to 18 months, the Conservative government has really been putting the pedal to the metal when it comes to mass immigration. Mm-hmm. They've really been welcoming in as many immigrants as they humanly can. Well, and this is obviously making a massive difference.
I saw an article, where was it? Russia Today or somewhere, that there is now a, you know, we've got these caravans that come up from Central America. Well, I think they start in Colombia, go through Panama, and up through Central America, and they're getting bigger and bigger and more aggressive. And the latest one that is formed has something like 90,000 people in it. And so you're talking about moving a fair size, like that's like a fair size city's worth of people. And you know, they come here, and I was recently looking at some of the elements of President Biden's America Rescue Act, fake President Biden, but still, it really, really does offer them free health care. It's just amazing that these people who are being let in as refugees, they're being let in as refugees with little or no documentation. Those are now categories that are eligible for Obamacare, and Obamacare has been made free for people who don't have means. And so there you go, literally offering them free health care to these people who walk across the border. But we'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, KosherTified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future. We are back. All right. So every week you've got a Wednesday this week in the, no, what's it called now? The Patriotic Weekly.
Patriotic Weekly Review.
I was in the time machine. Sorry. And also on Friday you have sometimes a mini documentary, or it could be a live stream. What do you have for us this week?
This week on Patriotic Weekly Review, we have a member, a leading member, should I say, of the National Justice Party. We have Warren Baylog. He is joining us. Very, very much looking forward to speaking to Warren. And on Friday, I'm going to be doing a condensed sort of soundbite video pre-scripted about the issues with David Amos, with the fact that his murder was essentially downstream of the policies he supported himself. And as I said, that's not to condone his murder. That's not to say his murder is in any way correct for committing such a horrific act, but it is putting things into perspective. And that's what I will be doing on Friday. So both of those shows, hopefully, will be somewhat entertaining.
Okay. Well, those are highly recommended. We have a couple minutes. You know, there. I heard that there is a giant, like, million or 2 million people out on the streets in Paris against the what is it, the passport sanitaire or whatever, the health passport. You've got stuff going on. Who knows what's going on in down under, because they've locked down all the media, so we don't even know what's going on there. We do have one little development in America that was pretty interesting. Well, you've got the Chicago police are threatening to go out on strike, and I think a lot of them are already not going out. The Seattle police are getting fired left and right, and so the criminals will come out. But in Louisiana State University has given up on enforcing a vaccine mandate to get into their very popular football games. They have a stadium with probably over 50,000 seats. Because of non-compliance, because they couldn't enforce it, because people just weren't complying. And once non-compliance becomes the norm, then I think this is a great example. If non-compliance becomes the norm, then we can beat this thing.
I agree. I think it's a game of numbers, really. And as I've said before, much of this, I believe, is a test to see how compliant people are. And if I've all talked about this before, where there's three real categories of people: the compliant, the non-compliant who are doing so, there's the willingly compliant, there's the compliant who are doing so under duress, and then there are non-compliant. And our aim is to get as many of those compliant who are doing so under duress to pop into the non-compliant category. And that seems to be happening more and more every day. And if we hit a tipping point, we have beaten them.
Yeah, and so at Louisiana State University, I think part of it was people who had been vaccinated, hoping to go to games, joining in with the non-compliant people and not showing their passports and things like that. With the Chicago Police Union, the union chief is saying, even if you have been vaccinated, do not supply your health data to the city. Do not comply. And so those are both means where people, because a lot of people, you know, not everybody understood either the medical risks of getting vaccinated, but they didn't understand the political risks. And I think more and more people are understanding both risks. And some of those are people who have already been vaccinated, and those people need to be brought over. They can't be shunned forever. But we're at the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you again at the beginning of next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Medical Radio.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.